Welcome to Herb W. Morgan's Slaying Bulls and Bears, a podcast about economics, markets, investing, politics, and profit. Every Monday, in less than 20 minutes, Wall Street portfolio manager Herb W. Morgan distills the complex and complicated into the simple and sensical. Here's Herb now.
Morning, everybody. I'm Herb Morgan, Senior Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer here at Cantor Managed ETF Portfolios. This is my weekly economic and market commentary for the week beginning today, March 11th, 2024. As a reminder, you can follow me intra week on Twitter and LinkedIn if there's any additional commentary. The presentation has been prepared by us, Cantor Fitzgerald Investment Advisors, for use with investors and financial advisors, planners who are expected to make their own investment decisions. Nothing contained in the presentation should be treated as investment advice. There are no recommendations for purchase or sale of any securities. The information contained herein is purely for informational purposes only. Well, let's get right into it. We had a slightly lower week in equities as measured just by the S&P 500 index, down about 0.25%. But you can see mid-cap stocks were up big, small-cap stocks were unchanged. That's a very unusual pattern. We don't usually see that. But what happened? We had international markets really catch a bid last week. And developed international, as measured by EAFE, is closing in on the gains year-to-date of the S&P 500. One of the reasons for that is because, in my view, it's more likely than not that the European Central Bank will cut rates long before the U.S. does. The U.S. has a tight labor market, strong economy, actually a rebounding manufacturing sector, and Europe is really getting close to recession. And normally, the ECB follows the Fed, but in this case, we might see an instance where the ECB goes ahead of the Fed. Interest rates came down, got down to about 408, 409 in the 10-year, so the aggregate bond index up about, looks like 0.8%. Long-term treasuries up about 1.4%. Okay, moving along. We got the final reading for February S&P Global Services. The services sector came in at 52.3, virtually unchanged from the prior 52.5. Anything above 50 says the entirety of the sector grew in the month of February. Clearly, that's not a recession. ISM also measures the services sector. By the way, the services sector is about 80 to 85% of the U.S. economy. It's the biggest part of the U.S. economy. That fell from 53.4 to 52.6. Also a 50 line of delineation. So that is expansive and showing growth. New orders really took off, suggesting further growth ahead. Again, why would the Fed cut interest rates if inflation has not reached their target? And we're still at full employment, and the economy is actually expanding. How is it still expanding? We're going to get to that in a little bit. Business activity rose to 57.2. That's a robust number. That's a number that could potentially signal reacceleration of inflationary pressures. However, on the negative side, we did see the employment component dip below 50. Factory orders dropped 3.6. That's a pretty sizable drop. As you can see, if you look through, left to right there on your screen, you're going to see a lot of negative numbers. It's a volatile series, but we always back out transportation because transportation orders are such high volume, particularly its aircraft. Think Boeing dropped. Take that out. We're down about 0.8%. Let's move along. Trade balance for January, trade deficit rose 5.1% from $64 billion to about $67.5 billion. The trade deficit, the way we calculate GDP, is a subtraction. If we had a trade surplus, it would be an addition. So the formula for GDP, consumption plus investment plus government spending plus exports minus imports. Everything we import subtracts from the GDP figure. Clearly, the trend is better because we've become more energy independent. A big part of our trade deficit has historically been petroleum, oil. We are becoming more energy independent. We are producing more energy domestically. That is a net positive, but $60 billion a month is still a very substantial trade deficit. Consumer credit was reported for the month of January, up about $19.5 billion. That's a sign of strength of labor, which is the same as the consumer, and a confidence in their prospects for earning income and for their job. Revolving credit, that's just that basic laying down your Visa, MasterCard, or American Express, that gained about $8.4 billion in the month. Non-revolving, which is term purchases. You went out and bought a washing machine and dryer and refrigerator with a loan. That gained $11 billion. Sometimes if you see non-revolving, not grow, but revolving grow, that could be a sign of strain on the consumer, right? I lost my job. I'm maxing out my credit cards. That's definitely not the case in this report. Why is the consumer so strong? Why is the services sector so strong? Therefore, earnings are quite strong. Well, it's jobs. The amount of stimulus put into the economy, I know I say this frequently, but it's worth repeating over and over. The amount of stimulus put into the economy as a result of the COVID and the economic shutdown was so unprecedented, so large. You know, think of the largest you could think of, 08, bigger. World War II, bigger. That's how big that stimulus was. So even though we've hiked interest rates and we've let the Fed's balance sheet come down a little bit, the balance sheet's still massive. So the stimulus is still there. It's not really restrictive. I know Chairman used the term rates are in restrictive territory last week, but I didn't think that he was using it appropriately, in my opinion. Here's job openings, right? Job openings, they're down from a 12 million pace to, 8.86, let's call it 9 million. But total unemployment is much lower than that. So the ratio of job openings to unemployed workers at 1.4 is historically high. Weekly claims for unemployment came in on Thursday. As always, they were unchanged at 217,000. That's a very low number. That means the economy and the jobs market is healthy, if not actually robust. Then we got the two reports, one from ADP, Automated Data Processing, which is a company that does payroll, has a statistical methodology to determine how many jobs the economy gained or lost in a month. They say that they believe private payrolls rose by 140,000 in February. That was on top of 111,000 in January. Services jobs were all of that. We saw the ISM services and the S&P Global Services number. So it was a robust report. That was, of course, followed up by the Bureau of Labor Statistics report. They say we added 275. And if you remember last week, I said this could be the week that we start to see weakness in the jobs report because we're coming off all these big months and et cetera. And no, we're not seeing weakness in the labor market. That's great. But it doesn't help the Fed's mission to deal with inflation. So even though I thought the Fed chairman was really kind of dovish in his commentary last week, he had to testify in front of both houses of Congress, to committees of both houses of Congress, to keep us feeling here on Wall Street that the interest rate cuts are coming. Let me stop this for a second and bring in the screen here. And there we go. You should be looking at that now. Yeah, we're going to hide that. And we're going to go to world interest rate probabilities. This is a screen which shows the likelihood of, according to bets in the Fed funds futures markets, of a rate hike or cut. There is a Fed meeting which will conclude on March 20th, 9 days from today. They are saying there's about a 2.3% chance of a cut. Now, you go back a few months. Let's graph this. This is so fun to do. I love doing all this. You go back here, back in late December, right around Christmas time, there was an 88% chance the Fed would be cutting interest rates next week. Today, there is a 2% chance that the Fed will cut interest rates next week. So we don't see that happening. When do you get to the point of where the market sort of believes there's a good possibility that not in May, but in the June 12th meeting? And if I were to graph the June 12th probability of that, you can see back in December, we had over three rate cuts. That's a cut is considered 25 basis points baked into the pricing as far as Fed funds futures betting. Today, just a little bit less than one is expected. And as we get closer to that, if we don't get better news on inflation, I think then we could see, ultimately have some problems with that. So back over are we going back to our presentation here? Yes, I believe we are. We are looking at non-farm payrolls. We're going to move on and talk about economic data for next week, or for this week rather. Nothing scheduled today. Small business optimism, and is Tuesday. The biggest thing we're looking for on Tuesday is the CPI, and the consensus is that an acceleration month over month from 0.3 to 0.4. I heard a reporter on CNBC talking about 0.4, and that's annualized at 4.8. No, it's annualized higher than 4.8. It's not 12 times 0.4. It's 0.4 compounded 12 times. So that is certainly not good. Core will be the more important thing. We need it down. And I can't believe the Fed would cut rates in this scenario unless we have a jobs problem. And we clearly do not have a jobs problem. Nothing on Wednesday, Thursday, initial claims for unemployment, retail sales, and then the PPI also looking to come in, expected to come in at 0.3. That's the same as it was the prior month. Friday, New York State manufacturing, import and export prices, industrial production, capacity utilization, and consumer credit. This is available in all kinds of places, podcasts, etc. I want to thank you for tuning in. We'll be back to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Slaying Bulls and Bears. If you'd like to download the slides for this week's podcast, go to www.efficient-portfolios.com and join our mailing list. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, rate us online, and share with a friend if you found this helpful. See you next week!